and welcome to Table Talk Game Talk On Topic, a show where we talk about tabletop gaming topics of all kinds. I'm one of your hosts, Fletcher.
I'm Kitty.
And I'm Chris.
Today, we're talking about gaming obsessions, whether it's needing to collect everything for a particular board or card game, owning every book published for your favorite role-playing game, or just wanting to play the same game over and over and over. What causes us to get to this level of obsessiveness, and when should we try to rein it in?
But first, a thank you to our Patreon friends of the show, George Gia, Adam Harrison, the SGC, and Thomas Acciaretti. Also, a huge thank you to our other patrons as well. Okay, this is our last show in February, so our last plug of the Dice Tower News show, and we're not going to have another one in the stream. So if you like the Dice Tower News that was in the guest spots on Friday, I suppose, then you're going to have to go subscribe. So just search Dice Tower News. I'm trying to figure out, because I heard that it wasn't on Android Play for some reason, so I'm trying to figure out what's going on there, but I'm digging into figuring out where that feed is, but it's definitely at, well, it's definitely on iTunes. And if you can't find it in other places, let me know. It should be available every place, but yeah, let me know if not, so I can try to track down the problem there. Let's see. I have a few pre-show things. We've been doing more and more pre-show things. This is just supposed to be witty banter, but it's turning into lots of things to talk about. First, thank you, Steve, for the Xayah expansion. He got me the mini expansion for Xayah. So now I opened up Xayah again, and I like reorganized everything, and I'm going to start a solo campaign, and he's sent me down a rabbit hole. So, Steve, thank you for that. Also, a great congratulations. And you guys remember we played KeyForge at the game store a few weeks ago, and you met Eric and Mary.
Yes.
Eric Hoffman, yes, are one of our Patreons, and Mary's girlfriend. Well, they are now engaged.
Hooray! Oh, how
congratulations.
Exciting.
Yep.
Congratulations.
So, congratulations, Eric and Mary. And Patreons. Last week, I threatened to share our show notes, and now I have done that.
I saw that.
Yeah. I have figured out how to give patrons our show notes, so every Tuesday morning at 5 a.m., if you're a patron, you'll get a link to our show notes. I am not changing how we do show notes for this at all, so you'll kind of see how our stream of consciousness works and where we're on or off script. And yeah, we try not to be on script. Well, we try not to be scripted without it being obvious that we're reading. Does that make sense?
So, like reading a quote.
Yeah.
Or a letter.
Our witty conversations are totally organic and witty. And then finally, speaking of Patreons, I want to give a special undying gratitude shout out to Emil Jiljam, who is no longer a friend of the show, but will always have our undying gratitude. Emil, I think, was our very first friend of the show. He's been a friend of the show since episode 25. We're in episode 132 right now, and that's just crazy. And Emil, I hope you're still listening. You've given us a crazy amount of support over the last 2 years, and we truly, truly appreciate it. So I just wanted to call that out. So thank you, Emil. All right. I think that's all. We didn't do any banter. You guys are very bad at banter.
I'm sorry. I got totally distracted because the dog walked into the office where I was recording, and normally the door is shut, but Spencer brought me tea because he's a really good husband, but he left the door open, and I got totally sidetracked trying to text Spencer to come shut the office door, hopefully with the dog on the other side.
I thought that was the start of a joke. So the dog walked into the office, and then there was no joke there.
I'm just trying to, you know, get out of my food coma. I had a giant lunch, and I'm, you know, still riding that food coma.
I got, whatever the barbecue place is by us. We found a barbecue place, and so I've eaten a ton of meat, but I've also drank a ton of Coca-Cola Vanilla Zero, so I'm countering it. It's all good. All right, let's talk about obsessions, speaking of meat.
Just don't get the meat sweats.
Yes. Barbecue. It's my weakness. So this, and Kitty, I'm just going to call you out on this. Kitty told me just before we started recording, she's like, I'm not excited about this topic.
I'm not excited about it. I'm not saying it's a bad topic or anything like that. It's just, it didn't grab my attention the way some of our other topics do. But I often say that, and then halfway through the episode, I'm like, how did I not care about this before? So, you know, go ahead, change my mind.
All right. I'm going to attempt to change your mind. I blame Trevor Davis for this, though. So Trevor sends us some really great emails. And every once in a while, actually more often than not, I pick and choose very short pieces of those emails to pull out because those are very long emails. And you could do an entire podcast on just, you know, Chris reads Trevor's emails. That would be an entire show by itself. Trevor, I'm not going to do that. That is not an offer. So he sent us a thing on D&D back in September, actually. This is from a little ways back. He says, one thing I've noticed is that a fair share of people involved in D&D obsess about it more than any other game by far. Once they start playing, they go from not wanting the books to buying every one of them. They make 18 characters, ask to play 3 times a week, and I find myself often providing gentle encouragement to approach the game with some moderation. As I work through a backstory and with them over the email and the details some of these folks want to go into is intense. So the question is rather simple. Have you guys seen the obsessive side of D&D? What do you think of it? And how have you handled it in the past? Now, I think that that is a great topic by itself, and we can just talk about D&D, but I wanted to open this up to more just gaming obsessions in general. But we do still need to answer Trevor's question. So just keeping that in mind, I think all of this kind of plays out though. To start with, and if you follow us on our input threads on Board Game Geek, you already know a number of my admitted obsessions. Fletcher, do you have any obsessions in gaming at all? Or any obsessions that are just interesting?
So I would say like, you know, last episode I said like my favorite game of all time was D&D. So I have definitely been in that phase where I just wanted to like create character after character, finding different things to like min max or different strategies per character. And most of these didn't even like get beyond like, you know, level 2 or 3 or so.
Did you actually play them to level 2 or 3?
Yeah, for the most part.
No, that's better than a lot of people just like, I've leveled my characters up to level 20, but I've never played it. I just know what I'm going to level them every single time. I've done that.
I would say like that. That's probably like my biggest past obsession, I would say. Beyond that, I mean, when I would play video games, like I would say anybody that's played Civilization, you know, like, that could be an obsession. I've definitely done like the 16-hour marathon of playing Civilization on the computer where it's like one more turn and you're like cold and shaking and like I just realized I've been up for 16 hours and haven't had any food or water.
Yeah, it's like I don't remember the last time I ate, but oh wait, this technology is about to unlock. I'll just finish this real quick first.
Yeah, I need to send my worker over here quickly.
Yeah, when I was doing research on this, I found a lot of this was based around video games, because I think video game obsessions and just in general can kind of, they're exasperated because it's so easy to get lost in that, and you can do it by yourself. There's no one else to kind of keep you in check. If you're in a group and there's 4 of you, you know, and you keep playing Settlers of Catan over and over, eventually one of you is going to be like, hey, want to order food. But if it's only one of you, you know, the sane person isn't in the room. What about you, Kitty? Any obsessions?
I don't think I get that obsessive about things. I don't know. I was trying to think. I play video games, but I'm pretty good at setting it down. I don't know. It's just a personality type. Because I know a lot of people who are obsessive collectors. I know that collecting can be a big part of the obsession of gaming. And whether it's collecting the books or collecting all the characters or all of the promos, whatever it is for the game that you're currently really into, or if it's collecting all the games, it seems like obsession and collection seem to go hand in hand. And I prefer to see myself more as a curator.
Okay.
And I like to obtain things only that I feel belong in my collection. My collection is not a store that is supposed to have everything available. It is a museum that is only
belongs in a museum.
It belongs in a museum. So that's where I see myself, is I'm a curator, not a collector. And I've never really gotten as obsessive. My dad is totally the obsessive personality in our household. He picks a new hobby every 2 or 3 years and he like dives into it and he learns everything and it's totally intense in it. And maybe just having grown up seeing that, I was like, eh.
See,
I'm not going to do that.
Yeah, I'm a lot like that. Like, I will pick different. I mean, the number of hobbies I've had over a long time, I'm old, is a lot. I mean, I know a lot of things about a lot of things, and people are like, oh, I don't know. It's like, oh, yeah, I spent 2 years studying this, or I, you know, took multiple classes doing that. And it's fun because you dive into it, you get to know it, and then you get to, like, put it on the shelf, and it's like, pull it off when you need it. But I do definitely dive into things like that. Now, before we dive into this too far, I do want to put an disclaimer. We are going to talk about things like OCD and obsessions and compulsions and those types of things. We are talking about this at a fun gamer level, not an actual clinical diagnosis level, although we might read a definition.
We are not psychologists.
Yes.
We are not doctors. We cannot diagnose or anything, and nothing we are doing is trying to judge or shame anyone. We are merely looking at this from a fun point of view.
Yes.
We're talking about these in a colloquial sense.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. So that said, let's just start with obsessions and what actually is an obsession. Because this is what Trevor asked. It's like, okay, people are getting obsessed. Now, there is an article that I Googled here and that talked about obsessions and it got really intense. Like when you start reading about some of the stuff at the clinical level, you're like, wow, that's bad. You know, it goes into codependencies and, you know, essentially just really, really bad things. But I found this excerpt from the article being a nice, lighthearted way of approaching this conversation. Obsessions vary in their power. When they're mild, we're able to work and distract ourselves. When intense, our thoughts are laser focused on our obsessions. They operate outside our conscious control and rarely abate with reasoning. Now, this can get really, really bad. And someone who's like truly obsessed you should probably talk to someone about that. But I know what this feels like in general as far as invading my every thought. When a new thing comes, when I'll talk about KeyForge because it's my current obsession. When KeyForge started being released and new information was coming out for it, I was checking the message boards every 30 minutes to see if there was new conversations or something new posted or checking the news. I was constantly looking for new information and new things to talk about and consume.
Was?
Well,
how many KeyForge podcasts are you still listening to?
Well, all right. So, but now I let it come to me. So
yeah, but they're not very good.
And they're not very good, but I let them come to me. So I'm listening to, I'm subscribed to like 3 or 4 different KeyForge podcasts, but when they drop, I listen to them and that's okay. I'm no longer on 3 different message board sites. I'm not participating in a bunch of different threads and all of that because I'm like, okay, I can step away from this. I got that initial, you know, I guess splurge out of the way. Now, when new news comes out, I'm still all about it. Like the new set of KeyForge, I'm like, I can't wait. It's exciting. I started looking for more stuff on that. But the point I'm getting at is for that short period of time, I feel like that was what was taking my thoughts. Everything else I was doing was just passing time until the next time I could check to see if anything new came out. And I do this for a lot of different things. I'm like, I don't know. Like, you guys have never felt this?
I mean, I've definitely felt obsession with things. I'm not sure about like games beyond like, you know, some computer games and maybe D&D. And in the beginning for like, you know, maybe like Kingdom Death or Gloomhaven, because I was the one that was like, yeah, we're going to play this, even though it wasn't my game. And I'm the one that like read the entire rule set and like essentially taught the owner of the game how to play. So I've definitely felt like that, but it's usually fairly quick for me.
All right. Well, then we're going to go to some of the listeners who can back me up on this then. So Corey, he says, a few years back, we played so much Seven Wonders that I regularly dreamed about playing Seven Wonders. And then there was Through the Ages, A New Story of Civilization. It's full of historical figures and wonders and inventions. And when those things come up organically in everyday life, that's what I think about. Sure, Einstein theorized about relativity, but he also doubles the science output of your best lab or library, and he gives you 3 harps every time you discover a new technology. This kind of stuff pops up in everyday thought life like dandelions in the lawn. So I like what he's saying here. Basically, he's saying, we'll talk about buying and collecting obsessions and stuff, but obsessions can be, are usually, you know, something like an idea, you can be obsessed about a collection. You can be obsessed about collecting things. But for what we're talking about here, it's like this idea. Like, I just can't get enough of this. I'm always thinking about this. I'm always planning something about like what to do next. When I was big into D&D, I wasn't a player, but I was like planning the campaign world in my head. I never wrote anything down because I was lazy. But in my head, I knew what I was going to do. And I knew what I like wanted to happen and present. And which is really kind of tricky there. Actually, D&D I'll get to a little bit later. Todd also agrees. He says, mostly my obsessions come from playing as often as possible and spending far too much time on BGG. Just last weekend, there was a game meetup Friday night, Saturday night, and Sunday. I went to all three. I also tend to dissect my playing of the game after it completes. What could I have done differently? I think it's more, I think this move was a mistake. I think, or this kind of thing. Anyway, what basically he's getting to is hyperanalyzing. He then reads the rule books afterward and makes sure that everything's good. He also finds FAQs and strategy discussions. I do all of this except for the strategy discussions. I hate strategy discussions, but that's just because I like coming up with my own strategies and I don't like to have discussions. My strategy is tainted. So
that sounds like a topic for another episode.
Strategy. Let's just do an intervention on Chris. What about this kind of session? Is this something that you can relate to, Kitty?
I guess more. I've definitely, when I get into a game at first, I'll have dreams about a game. I just feel like maybe it's the word obsessing that doesn't get it. And like, maybe it's just that with board games, I don't have enough people around to be able to play the game enough to get that like real, like crazy feeling. The thing that I can maybe most closely relate to is with books. When I read a really good book, I get super into it and I want to talk to somebody about it. I usually make Eve read it, my sister, and we'll discuss it. But there's only so much you can do. Like a book is, there's a start and a finish. And once you finish it, you can't really like, I've never gotten to the point where I'm like, oh, I'm going to like just turn it over and read it again. You know, I don't get that crazy, but I will get like book hangover. Where you read a really, really good book and then you're like, oh, I just want to live in that world some more. I don't want to read anything else. There's nothing else that's really like filling that space. So I get that feeling. Does that count?
I think that counts.
Sure.
Yeah. I've only ever had that feeling once with books. And that was when I read the last Harry Potter book. I'm like, I can't believe it's over.
It's over. It happens to me all the time.
Yeah.
I can't believe it's not butter.
But it's never butter. Although now they have the new Harry Potter movies out, and I'm like, eh, they're okay, but they're only okay.
Mm, yeah.
All right. And Michael Ohl has one here. He says, I feel silly with my current obsession sometimes. I currently own at least 100 or maybe more Matchbox and Hot Wheel cars. Every time I go to the store, it seems like they carry these, and they are usually a dollar or less per car. I'm playing a game called Gaslands, but to me, the most fun part is creating my cars. I see one on the shelf, and I get all these ideas of, oh, I can put chains here or run a machine gun there and paint it all rusty and grungy. His wife's probably going to kill him if he brings so many more cars. On a side note, he needs to start playing more. He says, I haven't been able to hook up with his local game as Gasland appears to be popular here, but he always seems to be busy when the group plays. This is another thing that I can really, really relate to. It's a game that you want to play, and you want to play it so much that your involvement with the game is basically all of the meta stuff outside of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You guys make great radio with the whole
It's hard to know when you're finished with an idea sometimes, Chris.
Just keep talking because I'm never finished.
I totally get this part of it, where when you're into something and you want to share the experience, but there aren't as many people around to share it with, you get really into everything you can do solo. And whether it's playing the game solo or it's creating, I used to love when we would play role-playing games, and I need to get back into it. And I'm gonna bully Chris into DMing something because he used to do it for us all the time and now he doesn't. But I would love painting miniatures and going on, oh my gosh, I knew the name of the website until I was about to say it. Hero Forge,
yep.
Mm-hmm.
And I would play around with my custom mini like for so long before I would actually get around to ordering it. Because like, what if I want to change my hairstyle? And that part of the game is almost as fun to me as the part of the game where you sit at the table. Because it's the anticipation building where you get to like get the joy out of all of the background of the game. There's so much more joy to be had than just the actual sitting at the table. There's more fun stuff to it. So maybe if that's obsession, I count in there too.
it's a minor type of it. And that's really what I think we were talking about gaming obsessions. I think we're talking, they're short-lived but intense. Or they don't necessarily have to be intense, but it's that kind of thing where it's like, oh, yes, this is really cool. And I want to invest all of my, you know, free cycles and playing with this idea or this concept or kind of tweaking this out.
I do think you can get into this cycle, though, where for some people, the fun part of D&D, especially role-playing games, but any game is like, it's the newness of it. It's the getting as deep as you can, understanding, finding out all the stuff is like the really fun part, the creating the new character, the starting a new campaign. That's the fun part. And I really still like playing with my characters and going deeper into them and leveling them up and all of that kind of stuff. And I feel like sometimes the newness of something else can get everyone else in a group like away from the like, but I want to finish the story that we're in. And sometimes that can be a distraction to me where I'm like, I just want to play in the world where we are. I don't want to have to be making 18 new characters all the time. I like my three characters and I want to play them a bunch.
Yeah, I think that's like a cult of the new versus cult of the old thing where it's like, you know, oh, here's this new hotness. Let's go do this and restart the campaign because that just seems like that's the right thing to do, as opposed to like, wait.
It's especially the danger of a cult of the new DM.
Yes.
The DM is the cult of the new. It's like, guess what, guys? I started a new campaign. Roll up some new characters. It's like, I just figured out my old character. I can't do this.
I just got to level 4. I don't want to start from level 1 again.
Right? And then the DM's like, oh, well, that's not a problem. We'll just level them up and we'll start at level 7. And you're like, yeah, I don't know how anything works.
Fine, passive-aggressive feedback, whatever.
The sorcerer you made for me, though, where I got to roll like 800 dice at once, was still one of the most fun one-off adventures we've done. So
every once in a while, and so when we were doing D&D, every once in a while, what I would need to do to keep myself interested is create something in the story that kind of changed things up a little bit. So, you know, there was one scenario where you guys were playing your normal characters. And I'm like, okay, now create a second group of characters that are, you know, 8 levels higher or something like that. And it was in the same world, but you guys were playing a different cast every once in a while. We would jump over to that cast to kind of tell two parts of the story at the same time. To me, that sounded interesting, but it sounds like you did not enjoy that. It's cool.
I did, but also, like, felt like once I was like just, I was still like reveling in my like, oh, like, do I want my hair braided or should I have it in the bun? Or like, which facial expression is the best for my character? And I haven't even ordered my miniature, let alone painted it. And you're already on to a new party, you know? So
this is what happens when one person's obsession moves on faster than another person's obsession.
Maybe that's
conflicting
it.
Obsessions.
Yep.
Maybe I've learned to just not become obsessed because I'm just disappointed when I can't revel in it as much as I'd like to.
All right. Well, maybe this segues well into the next type of, we'll call these just, we'll call them obsessions, completionists. So these are people. Now, this was a hard one to find any kind of real information on outside of video games. In video games, a completionist is somebody who plays a video game and then will continue to go back and play it until they've unlocked every secret, gotten every item. There's different levels of completionist depending on what you're aiming for. But if you want to go do every side quest in Zelda, that's a type of completionist. I want to find every seed. I'm going to do, you know, get every armor, every picture of every creature, whatever the case is. Like, this type of trait is, it does come over into the analog world when we're talking about collectibles and expansions and promos and just wanting to have all of those things. So Kitty,
Kickstarter
exclusives. So Kitty, it sounds like you've never been a completionist when it comes to, like, is there something that you have, like, a collection of where it's like, I want everything of this?
I used to feel that way. I had some things that I wanted to complete my collection. I wanted to do that. But at the time, like, I was a kid or a poor college student, and I couldn't do it. And it just got so frustrating that I learned to let go of that desire. That I was never going to be able to do it. I didn't have the money or the time or the will to do all of these things. So I just let it go. And I decided that I was going to focus on getting what mattered the most to me.
What about you, Fletcher?
Yeah, no, I've always been and still battle with completionism. And it was essentially like you, Kitty. It was beaten out of me at a young age because I didn't have the time or the money to complete the things that I wanted to complete. So it was just kind of like, I can't be a completionist, even though I really want to.
And I think that that's a good thing in some ways, is like not having the disposable income at first was really like a way to teach me like what is actually important to me. Like, how much do I really need? And now I think I've got a good idea of what I really want to focus on. So like with Kickstarters, when we were doing the Kickstarter episodes of the podcast, I would feel like I had to back something every week, or at least put something forth good to back every week. And now that we're doing Dice Tower News instead of Kickstarter, I really only back something when I really want it. And it's like that ability to step back and be like, oh, like, I don't have to do this. I don't need all of this. That, you know, it really allows me to have a better idea of why I want something.
Yeah, I would agree with the Kickstarters for sure. Right now, there's three Kickstarters that I really, really wanted. Hyperspace, which was Sandy Peterson's space game. Aeon's End, a New Age, which is the latest Aeon's End and everything that comes with it. You can get all of it. And I've recently started playing that. And I'm like, oh, this is a really good game. I want this. And then Tiny Epic Tactics, which it's a Tiny Epic game. So I'm going to get that. Last year, Chris would have just backed all three of them. This year, Chris says, no, 10 for the year. And I have to make some tough decisions. So I let Hyperspace go, and I still haven't made a decision on Aeon's End, but Tiny Epic Tactics, I'm definitely going to get, because that's like, there's this nostalgia aspect to it. I love the Tiny Epic series in general, and I'm definitely backing that, even though I know that I could go to Gen Con and get the Kickstarter version, the deluxe version, at Gen Con. It's like, no, I don't want to risk it. I don't want to risk them selling out. I just want it as soon as I can get it. So I'm gonna get that. And it does feel liberating. After you just give in to the fact that I can't have everything, then you get to make the choices and you appreciate more of what you get.
And you have the room to discover something you might not have picked otherwise. I recently backed a Zorro role-playing game because my mom is super obsessed with Zorro. She loves Zorro so much. And I had no idea. And then, you know, when the new Zorro movies came out, like, what, in the 90s?
Now the old ones.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the Zorro was a show.
Yeah.
What, in, like, the 50s, 60s?
Yeah, but we're
and she used to watch it Zorro all reboots. The time. There have been so many. And she would, like, as soon as that preview came out, like, it was like she remembered her childhood obsession and shared it with all of us. And as soon as I saw this on Kickstarter, I was like, I have to back this. Even though I only did, like, the digital version, I'm just getting the PDF, I didn't go all in, I don't need all the stuff. But I think it would be so much fun to get me and my siblings together with my mom to play this game with her.
Yeah. Well, the completionist part, I grew up a little bit different. Well, I guess I grew up the same way, where I did not have money to buy things as a kid. But I think it was almost on the extreme side. Like, we had nothing. Like, if anything that I got, I remember getting a Transformer for Christmas one year. And that was our Transformer. That's the only thing we had. We had one Transformer. And that was cool because it was the only thing I was going to have. Sure, I wanted other Transformers, but it was never going to happen. So when I eventually grew up and had an income where I could buy my own stuff, I just go crazy now. I'm like, oh, I can afford all this stuff that I wanted as a kid, but couldn't afford then, not even close. Now I can, so I'm just going to get it all because I can. And that's not good either. So I'm trying to, for me, it's more of just like realizing it's happening, and then I can kind of step back, which leads us into collecting. Go ahead.
I feel like you've done a very good job, and I want to give you credit for it. I feel like you've really become more self-aware, especially over the last 2 years while we've been talking about things on the podcast.
It's gotten worse than better. So the Kickstarter thing was mostly because of the podcast. And now giving myself the ability to get Kickstarters but not have to do it every week is really kind of nice.
Mm-hmm.
So collecting, and I think this collecting is going to be a bigger thing here. So a few excerpts from this one, because I think this is interesting. Everybody collects something, whether it be photographs of a person's vacations, ticket stubs from ball games, souvenirs of trips, pictures of children, athletic trophies, kids report cards, or just junk in general. Everyone's collecting something. Growing up, we all...
The stuff I collect is not junk, okay?
It could be, though. It says, growing up, we all collected something we made into a hobby. It could have begun with baseball cards, marbles, or stamps. Then it moved on to antique books, longer barrel baskets, I don't know. State quarters. I used to collect state quarters.
Oh.
or Adam's checks, I guess. There's clocks. Adam clocks. Some people collect for investment. Some collect for pure enjoyment. Some collect for expanding social lives, attending swap meets, and exchanging information with like-minded souls. For some, people collect is simply the quest, in some cases, a lifelong pursuit. Additional collector's motivations include psychological security, filling a void in a sense of self, or it could be to calm a means of distraction. Claims a means of distraction. Much as a uniform makes the man, collectors could be a means to immortality or fame. Now, this last part, collecting could be a means to immortality or fame, I think kind of hits the nail on the head for a lot of types of, like, the more extreme collectors. There's the guy who runs Game Hole Con. Why is his name escaping me? I feel terrible about this. It'll come to me. He has a copy of every D&D first and second edition item ever made in shrink wrap. Multiple copies for multiple editions. He's one of 10 people in the world that can claim this. And people know Alex Kramer. That's his name. And people know... his name. They know who he is, and he'll show off this collection, and it is something for him. It started out as just kind of like, collect a few things here and there. And then it got to a point where the collection had reached a level where he was like so close to having it completed. He had to have it completed. And that, I think that really plays into a lot of things. Like when at my Arcadia Quest collection, I spent $100 on the last figure to complete that collection because it was the last figure to complete that collection. And not having it was causing me agony. And even though spending $100 on a tiny plastic figure was really not smart, it felt like the right thing to do at the time. Like, collecting is such... And I think it's a human nature. Like, nobody can say, it's like, no, I've never collected anything. At least I don't think. And if you can, let me know. But I truly don't believe that anyone can say, no, I've never collected anything, which is different than a completionist collector. So remember, collecting something, you can collect stamps, but you'll never own every stamp. But you still have a stamp collection. You still have a coin collection. These are kind of stereotypical 60s collections, but yeah.
I feel like this reminds me of a story from my childhood where I was in kindergarten and the teacher read this book about, you know, the kid who had the security blanket and they wanted to bring it with them to school and they can't bring their security blanket to school. It's time to, you know, be a big kid and go without your blanket. And they cut the blanket in half every day until there's just a tiny square of the blanket that they carry with them in their pocket. And I remember going home and being like, I have to find myself a security blanket. It was not something that had ever been on my radar before. I was not into security blankets. I didn't have a security item of any kind. My toys were all kind of like, what do I want to play with in the moment? There was nothing that was like my favorite special toy or blanket. But because now I knew that out there, this was like a problem that people had, I had to get into it. And like, so this is how I felt with collections, was like collections are something that people are supposed to want to do. So I had penny collections and I collected quarters and I collected Barbies for a while, but I've never really felt the pull towards it. And I don't know, like I've done it because I feel like it's something that I should do. But then there's like also the, well, it's being told that you shouldn't be doing this, but then it's also like somehow encouraged in the telling you you shouldn't be doing it at the same time. And it's so confusing to me. And I have so many mixed feelings about these things. But yeah, I've never really felt that pull, but I know that so many people feel it so strongly.
Yeah. So to me, collecting and completionism kind of go hand in hand.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I try not to collect things because if I start collecting them, I'll want to complete.
It leads down the path. Yes.
It's they're, you know, two sides of the same collectible coin. So I don't collect a lot of things and I don't collect avidly. The one thing I do kind of collect a little bit is, it's not game related, it's a little bit weird, but I collect knives.
Okay.
Because I was involved with the Boy Scouts for a long time, and in the Boy Scouts, when you go camping, you have several different knives, and then you kind of just like get knives as gifts. Yeah. You get knives as gifts from, like, you know, relatives or family or friends or something like that, because they're like, oh, you like knives? Like, I got you this knife. So then I have like a box of knives, essentially. And then I started reading about knives and, you know, learning about the different kinds and different types. So then I started kind of like collecting them and going out and, like, you know, buying some. That's really the only type of collection that I do. And it's, I mean, I'm sure it's impossible to collect every type of knife there is in, you know, the world. So it's kind of like a very, very casual type of collection on something that you can't complete.
Yeah. And I think that that's one of the reasons we talked about it briefly last week, why Keyforge is nice, because it cancels that collection aspect of things.
Yeah.
You can have a few of
them.
The
completionist.
Right. Yeah. It cancels the completionist.
You can't complete it.
Yep. And if you can have a collection that's not completable, but still is a satisfying collection, that can satisfy that collection instinct without it triggering that obsessive instinct. Because that's really what happens is when you try to collect and you're trying to complete those collections. My non-game collection is shot glasses. When I drove around the country, I hit 38 states in 2 months. And every time I went to a new state, I would get a shot glass for that state. And I'm like, I'm just going to have this shot glass collection. And the idea is at some point, I'll relive that trip one shot at a time. I'm going to have to do it just before my deathbed, because after 38 shots, I'll be on my deathbed. But yeah, so that was, like, sort of the concept.
Yeah. I don't know. And do you feel the need to, like, go and get the other, what, 12 states that you need? Or do you feel like your collection is complete because it's a representation of the trip?
So here is the problem with it. Yes, I've always thought that I would go back and I want to visit all 50 states, and the shot glasses were a way of calculating that, right? But I would have to go back and, like, line them up and then figure out which states I don't have shot glasses for, and then say, but yeah, I have visited that. So should I get a shot glass for that online, or do I need to actually go to that state again? Like, the rules aren't concrete. And so it's like, what is this collection? What am I collecting? Is it just the glasses, or is it evidence of the experience of being in the state buying the glass, right? So, and that's really kind of the crux of collections, is it's also part of the experience of collecting. You know, when you can pick something up in your collection, it's like, I know where I got this and I know what I did, and you know, this is why this piece is important to me. That makes that collection all the more valuable. But once you lose that connection, you also maybe lose the connection to the collection in general. So I still have the shot glasses, but do I still have that connection to them? I don't know. But I do know that I do have a collector's instinct, and I have to be
bigger. You have a completionist instinct.
Yes.
You are so the completionist.
That's actually a better way to say it. So if I start collecting something, I must complete that collection. So I try to either A, not collect things. So if I get something that is collectible, I'll just treat it, nope, this is not a collection. This is not important in any way. I have one or two of these things. That's fine. I'm not collecting these. Or I have to be really careful as to what I am going to collect and make sure that what I get is something that's feasible to collect. And do I really, really need it? I'm trying to make that judgment call ahead of time before I make that decision. So right now I'm focused on a few living card games, and I'm okay with that. But you brought up FOMO, and I have that listed in our notes as well. So the fear of missing out, and that's why you started collecting, you know, your first, oh, you needed a security blanket.
Oh, yeah.
Like, maybe I needed that. Am I missing something?
Am I missing it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this is a big reason why collecting starts to happen, especially the completionist thing, especially in board games. You know, there is a number of people who have mentioned, Oh, let me grab this real quick. This is the greatest sound ever. We're going to just talk about collectors here. So Cyan says he goes all in on most every Kickstarter he backs, partly because he's a collector, partly because he's a completionist. Exactly what we were just talking about. He also collects games with the nostalgic factors and IPs he loves, like Star Wars. He collects X-Wings and Armada figures, even though he knows he'll never actually play these games. But when you're looking at Kickstarters, and this is the problem with having a Kickstarter habit, is if you are also a completionist, you can't just back a Kickstarter at its base level. And of course you can, but it doesn't make you feel good. It's better to not back it at all than to back it at a base level. Hyperspace, I just mentioned. If I was going to back that, I would back it at the $300 level because I want everything. I could have bought the game at $70 and had the game and played it, and I would have never known the difference. It's not like I'm going to get all of these different promos down, but I would have felt worse buying the base version of the game. And I feel like, it's just a wait. I'm not getting any of it. It's fine. It's not something I need to worry about. And it's a tricky thing.
I've been seeing a lot of talk on Twitter about Wingspan. That those ones, when they first went out, if you didn't get in on those first orders, you know, you're sitting around waiting for it and you're seeing all these pictures of people playing it, all these rave reviews, and it's just like, why didn't I do this? And that I understand more than the completionist aspect. I understand the, like, everyone else is having this experience that I want to be having now. And that feeling is much more relatable to me than the, like, I didn't get all the stuff. I don't know.
Yeah, well, you're like Melissa mentioned. She's like, I'm not really sure if I have a gaming obsession. Sometimes I feel compelled to buy games just because I'm worried they'll go out of print and I won't be able to get them later. I'm looking at you, Mikhail. That sounds right. I tried to mitigate this by only buying games that I have played already, but sometimes I can't help myself. So it's like, it's a very common thing, and I'll do that too. I have all these disorders. It's like, I want this because I want a complete collection. I want this because it might be good. I want this because other people want this. That's the worst one. Like, I don't even want it, but other people like it, so I want it.
But I feel like I should want it.
Yeah, it's just like, this.
It gets really tricky too with Kickstarter because you never know if something's on Kickstarter, is it actually ever going to make it to print? I mean, something... Sure, like these big ones where you're just doing it on Kickstarter to get the exclusives, that it's like, it'll be in retail. That's fine. But some of these smaller ones with these limited print runs, you have no idea. If I don't back this now, am I ever going to be able to get this game? It's hard.
Yeah. I do want to also shout out to Humble Tech Priest, not Priestess. For some reason, I got it in my head. It was Humble Tech Priestess. Sorry. Humble Tech Priest. he says he also collects and also has an X-Wing collection, like Cyan. He has so many of them, though. He was able to run an 8-person tournament only using his figures. Everyone was building their fleets from his figures, and nobody had to pick something else because he didn't have it available. He has multiple copies of everything. Wow. So
that's something.
Well, and I think the interesting thing here, he says, I think one of the big draws for me is if the models, games, etc. are something that can be displayed even if you no longer play the game, such as his X-Wing baby mobile that he made for his kid from damaged models. So, like, I think this is a big thing. If it's art as well, it's easier to justify, even if it shouldn't be justifiable.
I also really like that we're talking about games that are getting played. The thing that makes me crazy is the people who we were talking about before, everything is still in shrink wrap. Like, yes. What is the point? I don't get it at all. I do not understand the obsession with having things mint condition shrink wrap. Games are meant to be played. They should be opened and touched and loved. And I know that I am in a unpopular minority because all of my books are dog-eared and all of their spines are broken and all of my games have rule books that are missing staples and everything has been used. And I think these things are made to be used. And when we're not using them, it's like Toy Story. You're putting all of your joy in the attic and they're sad.
It's a value thing. So it's like this, I have this thing that's more valuable because it's never been used.
Yeah.
Well, because otherwise it's going down in value.
I do have, there's a couple of my Arcadia Quest figures that are still in shrink. that not because I want to keep them pristine, but because at some point, if I get past it, I might sell them back. And if they're in shrink, they're worth more. Otherwise, once I finish painting everything, they'll be the last figure I open up and paint. So, but it's not that I want to keep them in shrink. It's that I just haven't got to the point where there is value in opening it right now, which most of the time I do. Most of the time I do just open everything. Let's see. Bonnie says, what you are calling obsession, I believe some have talked about before as acquisition disorder. The need to have everything for something, including promos. I would call myself a partial sufferer of such. I don't go as deep as needing every promo. It's not Pokemon. I don't got to catch them all. But I did make sure I got all the big box expansions for Android Netrunner, also all the expansions for Terraforming Mars. But I've never had FOMO from not getting everything. And this is interesting because again, we're not talking actual clinical diagnosed issues. If we were, again, you're not getting advice from us. But this is still kind of cool.
Please don't.
Where Bonnie doesn't feel the FOMO part of it. It's just like some things she likes and she wants to get all of the main components to it. Now, I did take a look at acquisition.
She's a curator.
She has a curator. Exactly. Mm-hmm. But this made me wonder, it's like, is there a such thing as we can't say it.
Acquisition disorder.
Yes. Turns out, not really, at least from what I can tell. There is an Urban Dictionary entry for it, which is exactly what you would expect.
The highest of sources.
Yes. But there is.
That's only by Wikipedia.
Exactly. The next source is from Wikipedia, but it's cited in a lot of different places. But one I did find that was similar to this was compulsive buying disorder. It frequently presents with mood, anxiety, substance abuse, and eating disorders. And people who score highly on compulsion buying skills tend to understand their feelings poorly and have low tolerance for unpleasant psychological states, such as negative moods. Onset of CBD, compulsive buying disorder, occurs in late teens and early 20s and is generally chronic. CBD is similar to, but distinguished it from, OCD, hoarding, and mania. Compulsive buying is not limited to people who spend beyond their means. It also includes people who spend an inordinate amount of time shopping or who are chronically thinking about buying things but never purchase them. Promising treatments for CBD include medications such as selective blah, 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 blah. So this one's interesting.
That is interesting.
Yeah.
Retail therapy, but like sometimes when I understand the point of like you buy something and you get that quick hit of like
endorphins
and like happiness and stuff like that. Now you have it. And like, I can see how you can go down the path of like, this is how I manage my feelings is by buying stuff. But they also bring up like people who like to shop for things, but then don't buy them. And I feel like I do that a lot because I'm trying to research the best thing to get.
Yeah.
And then you end up not getting anything.
And then eventually I'll like end up getting it, but in the future it's like, oh, I need this thing or I need that thing. And I'll do a lot of research when it's like top of mind and I'm like, okay, I'm going to bookmark this page or I'll bookmark this and I'll come back to it eventually when I need to buy it or when I'm going to.
I will board buy things. And this usually happens around 10 o'clock at night and beyond. I swear to you.
Watching QVC?
Yeah, Amazon. But I swear, if you looked at my Amazon history, you'd probably see that 50% of my purchases were between 10 p.m. and 4 a.m. It's a problem.
So what I do is I create wish lists. And I have so many Amazon wish lists full of things that I have never purchased because I put together the wish list in a moment where I'm like, oh, this is what I want. This is what I, and you know, you look through it and you do your research and you find all the stuff and you put it on your list. And then 2 weeks later, you're like, I didn't need any of that, turns out.
Yeah.
And I like that. It's like the 24-hour rule where you're like angry and you write like a letter to someone, you should wait 24 hours before sending it. Now they're emails because nobody sends letters and I don't know where that came from. But, you know, if it's really something that's important, I'll go back and I will buy it. And I will buy the thing that I put on my list because I put so much time into that. But a lot of times I find that like I was just bored in the moment or like it's wishful thinking. Like I put together a really huge Amazon wish list of stuff I want for my backyard this year and I don't need to buy it in February. It is Chicago. It is like freezing. If you walk outside, it feels like your eyeballs are going to freeze because not only is it freezing, it is incredibly windy today. And I feel like I was going to blow away the second I went outside. So why on earth would I be buying lawn furniture now?
Maybe it's a snowplow.
I was dodging shopping carts in the Target parking lot because they were just whipped across the parking lot.
The ones, I was at the store today too, and it looked like they were being pushed by invisible people. It was so windy. And those were like the heavy metal shopping carts at the grocery store, not like the flimsy plastic Target ones. They were going on their own. It was crazy. Very windy.
But I think that idea of wait, and then if you still want it, get it, is a really, really valuable one. And if you have the ability to do that, you know, again, if you're not actually clinically OCD or something like that, it is a good way of kind of like tempering that. Because that's what happened with a lot of the Kickstarters now. It's like, I'm not immediately clicking on it. I'm watching it and I'm waiting and I'm waiting and I'm like, I'm weighing it against other options. And eventually it just doesn't become important enough for me to go back and hit it in that last 48 hours. It's like, it's not driving me there. But when you're doing something and you're like, especially when you're trying to complete a collection, you get these little, well, let me read this one. This is on Sense of Completion. And this is actually, I think, from Trello, one of their Trello's a to-do list app. And they were talking about, well, I'll just read this and then we'll talk about this. If you think you're the only one who feels a sense of accomplishment and satisfaction after clicking that last box in a list, think again. Big goals are important. They give you something to work towards, but small goals are important too. Once an overarching plan has been established, it's time to get small, achievable tasks. These are called SMART goals, and they're defined as, and this is SMART, S-M-A-R-T, S, specific, measurable, attainable, realistic, and time-bound. When we experience even small amounts of success, our brains release dopamine, which is connected to feeling of pleasure, learning, and motivation. When we feel the effects of dopamine, we're eager to repeat that action that resulted in success in the first place. So I got this new Arcadia Quest figure. I get a little shot of dopamine. I want to get another Arcadia Quest figure. And when you put these things too close to each other, it feeds into itself. And that's what kind of creates this obsession. Now you can game it. Like Trello, the point of this is you're creating tasks to, you know, complete a project or something. So you set up these little goals that feed into it and you do all these goals so you get your task done. But it can be used for evil as well, where you're trying to like accidentally, you know, you are building this collection and as you do it, it feels so good. And then you've completed it and you're done and you're like, what did I just do? Why did I do that?
Yeah. I hear ya.
So
I'm sorry, I'm totally distracted because it sounds like my house is going to fall down around my ears.
I know. I hear it's like whistling outside my window right now. It's crazy. It's like the hounds are coming to get me.
Right. Well, the good news is we only have one more piece of information, and this is from Eric Dodd. And I have notes here saying he has no problem. So I do that before. So he says, I don't think I've got into any one game enough to quite call it an obsession. I do have everything from Fantasy Flights published for Mansions of Madness 1 and 2, and I've painted all the figures, but I haven't bought any of the extra online adventures available for the game. Maybe when I played through the free adventures enough times, but I don't feel the need to own those adventures yet. He says, I like to think I've got a few deep interests, but not what I would call obsessions. I like the term deep interests.
Yeah. Because
in our hobby, I think we will all have deep interests in different things at different times. And we don't have to call them obsessions. We are just, they're hobbies. They're things that bring us joy. They're things that they're the toy of the whatever. And they're just fun to lose ourselves in. And I don't think that that's a bad thing unless you feel it's a bad thing. If you know yourself as like, hey, I am spending my rent money on X-Wing figures, this is a problem, then yes, see someone about that. But if I'm spending my disposable income on X-Wing figures and I can't go to the movies or I can't go out to a restaurant to eat and I have to eat SpaghettiOs at home, you know, those are the decisions you make. Nothing wrong with that. So what do you think, Kitty?
As long as you're happy.
Was this subject as boring as you thought it would be?
I never said it would be boring. I said that I didn't find it as personally engaging as other topics.
Is that still
the case?
I found
a lot to say, though.
All right. Well, we'll call it at that, unless you guys have anything else to say on obsessions.
Nope.
Of course, I don't think so. I have one more thing. This podcast, this podcast is an obsession. That's true. It's one of those things that we've been doing every week for 132 episodes. It's going on 3 years. And never missed a week. Only missed one Tuesday. And that technically, I did leave a little mini episode to tide you over until the Wednesday. And it is one of those things where the reason I will never let us miss a week is because as soon as I do that once, it breaks the collection.
It becomes easier.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
So
let it go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, this is a side gig for us. We do it because it's fun. And if it stopped being fun, we would stop doing it. But
if it stopped being a side gig because everyone went to Patreon and was like, hey, we want you to do more of this, I think we would totally be on board with that.
If I could quit my day job to do this full time, 100%, I would.
That would be amazing.
Yeah, I would do that. Our hobby is still a little too niche right now, but maybe a decade from now. But that said, I'm going to be at GaryCon on March 7th through the 10th, Adepticon March 27th through the 31st. And you can follow us on Facebook at Tabletop Game Talk Podcast. You can follow us at Twitter at Tabletop Game TLK. Kitty is Lawful Good Mom. Fletcher is Net Fletch. And I am Game Master Chris. Leave us a review on iTunes. And you can follow us, or you can patron us, at tabletopgametalk.com/Patreon. Where now you get access to our show notes.
Can I talk now?
You can talk now.
Tabletop Game Talk is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. Thanks for listening, and remember, we love your feedback, so email us with comments or questions about today's topic at feedback@tabletopgametalk.com, and you'll be entered into a $50 gift card drawing on our next feedback episode. And finally, a huge thank you to our patrons: George, Adam Harrison, the SGC, Thomas Etchiretti, Jason Strong, Terrence Miltner, Steven Seitz,
Michael Ohl, Brian Arnold, Sean P. Kelly, C. Marie, Rudy Liu, Benjamin Haimowitz, Jerry Hong, Stephen Phillips, Caleb O'Brien, Jennifer Engelbrecht, Justin Willard, Christopher Dong, Jason Marks,
Jeremy Fisher, David Ratke, Nick Quickstra, David Sellers, Jason Rodney, Michael Yanikowski, Miles Clark, Cindy Lum, Phil Swarchel, Jordan Livingston, Ann Reynolds,
Eric Huffman, Adrian Dong, Christopher Vincent, Nate, Vaz Flintham, Sean Peck, Eric Salander, Mike Smith, Christine Meyer, Trevor Davis,
Wesley Traylor, Tim Vering, Chris Lowe, Joe Hoover, Timothy Gross, Jen Cotter, Jesse Walkoviak, Barry Peterson, Ben Gary, Emil Jewel Jacobson, Marina Stevens, and Brady Meltzer.
And a special thank you, and for our undying gratitude, to Emil Jojam. Until next week, keep playing games and having fun. All right, just in time, I get to go watch the end of the Oscars.
You watch that stuff?
Well, I didn't know that Sydney was so into this. Like, she's like, we're watching the Oscars tonight, right? I'm like, I guess we could.
And how long have you guys been together?
I know. We were watching the beginning, and she knew, like, everybody. And like, oh, that's the favorite, and this person's going to win, and this is behind this. And I'm like, okay, I have to go record. She's like, okay, but you got to be back down before 10 o'clock. I'm like, all right.
Yeah, I remember last year when I had a tiny, tiny baby, how into the Olympics I got.
The Olympics are awesome, though.
It was a really great time to have a small, small infant where I could watch curling at 2 a.m. curling.